All right, recording in progress. So, Chair Gene Hernandez, and I call this meeting to order. Our inspiration will be led by none other than Tony Rodella. Tony, I hope you're aware of that.
That's right.
Yeah. But he can dance on his feet. Okay.
Oh, I think I read my emails. Anyway.
Quiet, please.
Are you guys, is everybody easily discouraged? Here's a man who failed in business in 31. He was defeated for the legislature in 42. Again, failed in business in 34. His sweetheart died in 35. He had a nervous breakdown in 36. Defeated in the election in 38, defeated for Congress in 43, defeated for Congress in 46, defeated for Congress in 48, defeated for Senate in 55, defeated for Vice President in 56, defeated for Senate again in 58, elected President in 60.
Lincoln. So don't be discouraged.
Yeah.
Just because you fail doesn't mean you're a loser. Well, thank you, Tony. Now, where's our flag? Do we have a flag in your staff? I know. I think they have an option. Yeah. Here we go.
You're able to stand, please rise.
To the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you, Mary. Thank you, Chief Colleague. I hope everybody picks up on the fact that what do we pledge to? We pledge to a republic. We don't pledge to democracy. We pledge to a republic. People lose sight of that. What does that mean? A republic means we're a nation of laws. Man, I would so watch for a second. All right. Our roll call will not be 5-6. That's not who's excuse today, but none other than Barbara Sloan. Barbara?
Okay. Charlene Ashendorf.
I think she was excused.
Linda Barcelona, present. Lavon Brewer,
present.
Elizabeth Yusuf.
Excused, wasn't that really? Oh, apps, I'm sorry.
Jerry Kang.
Present.
Colette Shantisky.
Here.
Meredith Joanne.
Present.
Lane Jennifer.
Present.
Dean Hernandez.
Present.
Ann Kurtz Mellari. Ken Hickman.
Present.
Marianne Klinger.
Here.
Beck Levin. Victor Mendez. Crystal Miles.
Present.
Patty Mouton.
Present.
Lily Nguyen. Joni Nichols. Rachel Owen.
Here.
John Pointer.
Here.
Tony Gradella.
Hoorah.
Jeffrey Rodriguez. Anita Sen Matthews.
Absent.
I'm here.
Were you looking around the room for that?
Yeah. We're glad for that. Sandy Stack. Here. Nathan Steele.
Here.
Dave Tesla.
Absent.
Dave Wheeler.
Absent.
That's it.
Thank you, Barbara. And also, Dave would remind you that you have your service hour forms in front of you there. Please fill it out. Turn it in to Meredith. We'll get that to Dave. Hopefully, we're getting here to the end of doing this, but just put 8 hours on there. Don't worry about running down what you did or where you did it. Unless you did a whole lot and want to brag about it, then put it down. But otherwise, an 8 is all we need. Okay, public comment. It's time we have any public comments from anywhere in our public. Anyone wishing to speak? Yes, sir.
Well, good morning, everyone. Ron Farr with the Bethel team. In some of our cemetery last week and announced the alert assessment. I was over the county. Just want to remind folks I have flyers for the provider survey that's currently completing. And we'll launch the community caregiver survey next month. So I will share more information with you.
Are you going to handle that? Is that what you want?
Yes, I think you guys might have it.
We do. Yeah, we handled it the last time. So they'll be up here on the counter.
Yep.
Okay, very good. Thank you. Anyone else? Okay. Seeing none, we'll go back now to introductions. I think we pretty much have our same group here. We don't have any new folks, do we? Am I missing anyone? Okay. Our presentation, very apropos for me, Dementia Care Aware. Patty Bouton is the provider, and Patty's going to get up here and tell us what we're forgetting.
Forgetting jokes are
some of my least favorite. Good morning. How is everybody this morning? This is so exciting to be able to share with you what I think is one of the most innovative and important and impactful programs that has come from the state in a really long time. As most of you know, my name is Patty Mouton. I have served as vice president at Alzheimer's Orange County since 2005. I wasn't always vice president. I think I started as chief cook and bottle washer 100 years ago. But we have been serving the community for 41 years, and we are your local not-for-profit social services agency that provides education, support, referral and connection to community resources and clinical education throughout Orange County. And we are so excited to have been picked by UC Irvine, which is a principal investigator in this program called Dementia Care Aware. And we were picked by UC Irvine to be their outreach team for Orange County. Our sister organization, Alzheimer's Los Angeles, was picked also by UCLA and UCI to cover the Inland Empire and Los Angeles County. And we're working very closely with many entities that are providing an amazing education effort throughout the state of California for primary care physicians to have a better understanding of early detection of cognitive disease, and then appropriate cognitive health screening. That sounds like a mouthful and sounds like, well, why wouldn't they be doing it anyway? Well, the fact is, most primary care physicians, God love them, have had less information about diagnosing dementia than all of you have from the presentations you've had in this body. They have 4 paragraphs in one of the standard textbooks on all dementias. to get through medical school and to get through family practice. So it's not something on which primary care physicians get a lot of initial training unless they have an interest in it. And let's face it, with 7 minutes average visit time with your primary care physician, if you say to them, they ask you, how are you doing?
Fine.
How's your cognition?
Good.
Fine. That's about as much cognitive health assessment as happens in most primary care visits. Okay? What we have seen is the annual wellness visit in Medicare. How many of you even know what that is? The Medicare annual wellness visit. A few, but not very many. That was a big program about 7 or 8 years ago. And actually, this body and your Aging Services Collaborative worked with the healthcare agency and the Orange County Health Improvement for Older Adults group that was formed at the time to do a big campaign on the annual wellness visit, which included a cognitive health assessment. And what we found is most people didn't ask for it. And if they didn't ask for it, their primary care physician didn't do it. So it didn't take off the way we hoped it would. The Department of Healthcare Services and the Department of Aging recognize that California has the most dementia patients anywhere in the country. We have a disproportionate number of dementia patients. Orange County is aging faster than any region in the United States of America. And you can read more about the conditions of aging if you follow the QR code or the website for your aging services report that the Orange County Aging Services Collaborative recently published and is foundational to what will then become the county's response to the state master plan for aging. As part of all of that, the Department of Healthcare Services decided, after a great deal of effort that provided legislative money toward this program, which we helped to craft the legislation and lobby and advocate to get it passed, there's money in the budget that covers this program. So primary care physicians can free, not only get the education they need either asynchronously online, or they can attend something in person in their community, or they can attend a Zoom meeting that is put on by local experts that they know. In our case, it would be the professors of medicine at the UCI Division of Geriatrics and Gerontology, people like Dr. Lisa Gibbs, who is world renowned in geriatrics, Dr. Sagal, Dr. Tam. All of these folks are very, very highly respected, well-known, and published in their fields, are giving these talks 1 hour that really helps to bring home how important early detection is of dementia, how to use some of these cognitive health screenings, because they're not that complicated. And physicians can train or have trained their staff. So it doesn't have to be administered by a licensed clinician. A really good back office nurse can give a cognitive health screening, and then the doctor can know, this person did not screen well on this test. Perhaps further investigation and interventions are appropriate. Because as many of you already know, cognitive health, confusion that looks like dementia, could be caused by a variety of clinical conditions that we can correct. If your thyroid is low and your B12 levels are low, you could have symptoms that look like Alzheimer's disease, but that can be corrected. Poorly managed blood sugar or undetected diabetes type 2 can make people very confused. And so in a given situation, they might look like they have symptoms of Alzheimer's or another dementia. It's really important that we detect this. Yes, ma'am.
Synergy of different medications can also.
Indeed. When I give my Dementia 101 class, I talk about medication profiles. I'll just do it. I think I have time. I'm 67 years old. I live in South Orange County, where I have great access to medical care. I have wonderful health insurance. And this is not my personal medication profile, but it could be. Because you know what? The kids don't call as often as they should. So sometimes I'm a little blue, so I take a little Xanax. But not every night, just two or three or four nights a week. I have asthma, so I have this nagging cough. And the doctor, a couple of plans ago, gave me a flag and a cough syrup. And boy, is that stuff great. I don't know what's in it, maybe a little codeine, but I don't take it every night, just two or three or four nights a week. And, you know, I hurt my back moving a patient about 20 years ago. So I get these spasms, but, you know, it doesn't happen every night. So I have like a muscle relaxant, a Soma. I don't take it every night, just two or three or four nights a week. I don't sleep very well. So I have to take my Ambien early, but I don't have to take it every night, just two or three or four nights a week. And I wash it all down with a medicinal glass of Pinot Grigio. How do you think my memory is? Oh, and I forgot. I also, my allergies were acting up. So I went and I bought the bargain brand allergy medication, and it works great for my allergies. It's got Benadryl in it.
Oh.
Diphenhydramine. How's my memory now?
You're
worse. Worse. Okay. So that kind of concomitant medication can be very problematic, particularly for older adults, because our kidneys and our liver and all of our excretory kinds of metabolic functions slow down as we age. I know it's sad to say. I'd like to see them revving up because we need them more than ever now. But so people could have cognitive difficulties that have nothing to do with an organic form of dementia. And we don't know that unless we test for it, unless we ask the right questions. So this really amazing statewide program is designed to give primary care physicians and their staff access to excellent education encapsulated in 1 hour that they can take any way they like. So there's no excuse if I didn't have time. You know, instead of watching reruns of Blue Bloods, they could take this class, all right? And so it's really important that you talk to your primary care physician. I gave you these beautiful packets and they have all kinds of wonderful information for them. They're not for you. They're for you to take to your primary care physician at your next appointment and say, doctor, this is what's cutting edge in the state of California. And for Orange County, there's tremendous resources. Have you taken this training? I have found over the last 15 years that programs that bubble up from the grassroots have an impact on medical practice here in Orange County. And I'll give you a case in point. You may or may not know that I co-chair the Orange County Pulsed Coalition, which is a discussion for another day, but the Pulsed form was instituted in 2009 via statute, and it allows people to very specifically articulate their wishes for end-of-life care. But it must be signed by either a physician, a physician's assistant, or a nurse practitioner after the patient has filled it out and signed it, in order for it to be actionable. Nothing was happening much with Pulsed. We were doing all kinds of education at the hospital level and at the Orange County Medical Association, and you know, lots of high level, smart people with white coats and stethoscopes were saying, oh yes, this is really important. And nothing was happening. So, I was part of this movement, really just at entry level. And I said, well, what if we take it to the community? So we christened ourselves Partners in Pulsed, the PIPs, because Dr. Vincent Nguyen was our Gladys Knight. He was in charge of everything. And we started doing two or three community presentations a week. And pretty soon, we were having physicians call and say, I need some of these post forms in my office because somebody brought one in and they had made notes all over it. So we have to get them a clean copy. It worked in Orange County. It bubbled up. And now it really is the standard of practice. And we also preach, if you will, that when you have a serious diagnosis like dementia, one of the first things people should do is get all of their paperwork in order. Get your ducks in a row. Talk to your family. Understand that while you have capacity is the time to talk about and make important decisions that will impact your care when you can no longer speak for yourself. That's pretty important, wouldn't you say? I wanted to name the person who would speak for me in the event I couldn't speak for myself while I could think about it and while I could talk about it. And if we wait to detect dementia, as we are currently doing, most people don't get a diagnosis until they have frank symptoms of terrible confusion for 4 years and four different physicians. Well, what could happen in those 4 years? A lot, exactly. You could be scammed out of your entire estate. You could have nefarious relatives say, oh, I'm going to take care of you. Just sign over the house to me. You could have another terrible illness hit you so that you haven't gotten the time to think about how you want your care to proceed. Your spouse could die or you could get divorced. So now you don't have the support system that you thought you were going to have. 100 different things could happen to impact the course of your well-being once you have dementia symptoms. So if you don't get your ducks in a row quickly while you have capacity, guess what? You lose that opportunity for autonomy because somebody else is going to be making those decisions for you. So cognitive health screenings are a critical part of older adults' well-being. And we should all have a baseline cognitive health screening, okay? We have glucose tests almost every time we go to the lab. We should have a cognitive health screening, maybe not every time we go to the doctor after age 65, but frequently, so that we have something as baseline, so that if you have a change in your cognitive abilities, the doctor can more easily rule out what could be causing it. Because many, many different conditions, injuries, medication interactions, infections,
hearing,
loss of hearing, social isolation. Oh, hello, did we have any social isolation in the past 4 years? Why, yes, we did. That dramatically impacts people's cognitive abilities. So cognitive health screening should be absolutely one of the top things that physicians look at for older adults over 65. So this is kind of a crusade. It's part of our overall mission to increase the well-being of people who are aging in Orange County, and in particular, to make sure that their primary care physicians have and use the tools available so that people can get a screening as a routine kind of thing, rule out anything that might be percolating in their cognitive health, and then get it addressed if it's something that can be fixed. And there's a whole host of other reasons why early detection of dementia is important. The medications currently available work best if you start them early. And that's just one reason. So I want to make sure I don't go over time. I want to introduce Jocelyn Rubio in the back. Wave, Jocelyn. Jocelyn directs the Orange County Aging Services Collaborative, which compiled this report on aging in Orange County, again, which will provide foundational information that is then going to be used as we create our response to the county's master plan for aging. And in that plan, we must take the reins and insist that our clinical support people throughout the county, physicians, nurses, social workers, anybody who is dealing on a clinical level with older adults, understands the importance of cognitive health screening. You all can take the training. It's free, takes an hour of your time. And I think it would be really gratifying and important for you to understand what goes into a cognitive health assessment, because we need to be looking out for one another. Half of us at age 85 are going to have a dementia. Maybe it's just starting, or maybe it's been percolating for a few years. We hope we can push back the onset of symptoms with lifestyle changes and regular medical checkups. But think about that. And we're going to have more 85-year-olds in Orange County in the next 15 to 20 years than anywhere in the country. So it's in all of our best interests, not only to plan well for the needs of older adults, but to be thinking about some of the particular things like cognitive health screenings that will be so important to maintaining people's well-being and getting them the interventions they need in order to keep safe, healthy, and to be able to plan for their own future with their own autonomy. So I included these packets because this is what goes out to a physician's office. Alzheimer's Orange County, as the outreach partner for UCI as a principal investigator, has made well over 1,000 calls to physicians' offices since January. And we continue. We do about 300 calls a month, all the time, all the time, all the time. Talking about it, getting physicians into groups, going to the health plans and trying to get, you know, a group of 50 physicians who are coming for their quarterly meeting. Can we have an hour of that time? It's not that easy to do. And for those of you who have ever been involved in professional sales or clinical medical sales, it takes about 9 to 12 touches before you get any action. And that doesn't even mean that the physician and his tribe of people is going to take the training. That means now they're listening. So it's a very labor-intensive activity, and we appreciate your support. Take this to your doctor's office. Yes, Gene.
A couple questions. One, is dementia and Alzheimer's the same thing?
Ah, I didn't even pay him.
No, you didn't.
Alzheimer's is dementia. All dementia is not Alzheimer's. Dementia is a term like cancer, an umbrella overarching term that describes a syndrome or a constellation of symptoms that must include memory issues, but maybe memory issues are not the primary presenting symptom. And there are more than 120 different disease processes that could cause dementia. Alzheimer's disease is just one of those, and it accounts for about 2/3 of all dementia. But what we're learning is you can have Alzheimer's type dementia and also have vascular dementia or Lewy body dementia or frontal temporal dementia or primary progressive aphasia or dementia from brain injury or traumatic encephalopathy. So mixed dementia is very prevalent.
Well, yes. Probably answer my second question, because I've known people who have friends. They get diagnosed with dementia, and within months, they're dead. So what is killing them? Is the dementia...
Okay. If they're just getting diagnosed with dementia, the dementia probably didn't kill them. But one in three adults over 65, one in three dies either with or from dementia. So most dementias are fatal diseases in and of themselves. But if we are debilitated and we're not taking care of ourselves, maybe we aren't taking our medicines properly, maybe we aren't eating properly, maybe we're not paying attention to that nagging pain down our left arm, because we're not thinking clearly as a result of early stage Alzheimer's disease, then we're not going to pay attention to something that might be angina and causing us to have a heart attack.
Now, there's no cure for
There is no cure.
So what's early diagnosis does what?
Allows you to plan for the rest of your care. If the medications currently available are going to work for you, they will work better the earlier they get started. You can then...
You mean delays the symptoms?
Well, no. What it does is stabilize symptoms. So you may already have symptoms that are starting to impair your judgment or impair your ability to recognize familiar faces, impairing your ability to walk, impairing your ability to toilet yourself or get yourself dressed. The medications currently available, especially when started early in the process, provide a chemical ballet in your brain that allows your body to then stabilize some of those symptoms, sometimes for a period of 5 to 6 years. Okay, now if that were up to me, if somebody said, get an early diagnosis, get on the medication, and then you can toilet yourself for 2 more years, I would say, give me that pill today. Right? Wouldn't most... That's okay.
Another reason to get an early diagnosis and get a correct diagnosis is because the different dementia syndromes are treated differently.
Correct.
Alzheimer's is a lot different than treating Lewy body.
Correct. And some medications that you might be able to give for people with Alzheimer's, say in agitation, can be very, very problematic for people with Lewy body dementia. And you do need to tease out what kind of dementia it is, because the symptoms, the presentation, the trajectory of the disease, and especially the treatment are going to be different. Frontal temporal dementia is really tough on people, mostly because it hits men in the prime of their life, usually late 50s and early 60s, and it causes behavioral disturbances and judgment disturbances, because that's where executive function is in the frontal lobe. And maybe memory remains intact. So everybody just thinks, oh, he's having a midlife crisis. Oh, what a jerk he became. Oh, he made a little money and now he's just really dastardly. And what it is an organic brain disease that is causing this person to make errors in judgment according to, you know, community standards, and to not be able to function appropriately. I was with a family yesterday. The person with disease was a very well-known, famous, accomplished architect. He can't balance his checkbook. And that's what his family noticed. Everything else he was doing okay, compensating, but he could not manage his finances. And it was, you know, he wasn't paying bills, he was gonna lose his house, because he hadn't paid the mortgage. You know, it was all these things. Numbers were a problem for him. He has a variant dementia that they still aren't sure exactly what it is. It's not quite Alzheimer's. It's not quite frontal temporal, although it has caused a lot of language problems, but it primarily affected his ability to do anything arithmetically. Tragic.
I think culturally, yes. We've been our own worst enemies, because just what you said, we pass it off as, oh, I forget to let that in old age.
Right.
So we intentionally gloss over it. I mean, hear this all the time. Gosh, I can't believe I'm older. I can't remember. I can't do this. I can't do that. I forgot. Why did I go into this room? You know, yeah. That, and so we just dismiss like that. It's got old age.
Right.
It probably is starting dementia.
Well, so, I will tell you, it's never, ever, 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 never, ever, ever. Ever, ever normal for someone not to have cognitive clarity as they age. It is always due to some sort of dysfunction. Maybe something reversible, maybe not, but you take your liver and your kidneys, most of us take your pancreas and your spleen and other important organs into your 8th and 9th decades. We surely ought to be taking our brains. So it's never normal. Now, acuity is one thing. Maybe you get a teeny bit forgetful, or it's like, where did I put my keys? Oh, they're in my hand. Or, you know, that kind of thing. A little bit of loss of acuity, thinking about, who was I trying to think about the other night? The Irish actress Minnie Driver. I couldn't think of her name. And I knew she's a songstress, she's an accomplished actress, she's directed. What is her name? What is her? I'm thinking race cars. So my mind was thinking in the right direction. Well, that's just a little bit of loss of acuity because now I'm a little old lady. But if I couldn't have remembered anything about her or that I was thinking that I wanted to name who she was, that would be a problem. Okay, yes.
I was reading this morning, there are 3 approved drugs by the FDA. Are you going to speak to those now?
Well, I don't have time to speak to them, but I would be happy to come back or to bring an expert back. Those 3, we call them the MABs, monoclonal antibodies, because they all have MAB in the last part of their generic name. They're very exciting, but we don't know yet what kind of impact they're going to have on people. They're very expensive, like in the neighborhood of $30,000 a year, and they aren't yet approved by Medicare. And they have a very high side effect profile, such that people on these drugs have to go back and have brain scans regularly to make sure they're not having any brain bleeds. So we're not there yet, but one of them, Leqembi, indicates that it does not only remove one of the issues that we think might be part of the Alzheimer's syndrome, the amyloid plaques. We don't know if they're the cause or if they're the result of Alzheimer's disease, but we know that some of these drugs will start to remove that plaque. Whether or not that gives people any increase in their cognitive abilities still kind of remains to be seen. So, but we're getting there. Okay, it had been almost 20 years since we had had a new Alzheimer's drug approved. So now all of a sudden in a year and a half, we have 3, but they're not panacea. Okay, John.
Patty, is there a spectrum like there is with autism?
That's a really good question. Not really. Although some people do experience what's called mild cognitive impairment, which is a little more than senior moments or natural loss of acuity, but hasn't quite converted to a dementia like Alzheimer's. And they could stay in that early, we call it MCI phase, for a few years. More than 80% of those people convert to Alzheimer's disease. So there's not really a spectrum, but there's also, unless you're really looking at this patient very closely, you might not know what stage they're in. Especially because most people don't even get a diagnosis until they are in mid-stage disease. They get lost going to the supermarket and their family says, well, that's not great. And then they go in the house and they see the mayonnaise is from 1998. And they think, oh, maybe mom's got some problems. Oh yeah, there's a stack of bills. But every time I called her, she said she was fine. Hmm. Yeah, yes, ma'am.
Okay, so you mentioned that we could take this training.
We can.
And I'm looking at all of this while you're talking. Where am I going?
You can go online. So here, coming up on August the 18th, Dr. Azambua is going to give a lecture. You can do the QR code or you can do the website and you log in and you're on Zoom and you can skip.
Or when I want to do it on my time.
On your time, you can go to the Dementia Care Aware website that's on at the bottom of this flyer where it says for more information right underneath her picture. Go to that website and you can navigate it pretty easily and you can get to the asynchronous training.
You know, Patty, that was my thought. Is the chances that we could get that training in one of these meetings?
Oh, yes, there is. I would be happy to arrange that. I just have to talk with Claudia,
Fanny, and Barbara. Yes.
And Barbara. Yes. And yes, we will definitely get on the schedule. Absolutely, we'll get on the schedule. And at some point, we'd love to talk more about what the Aging Services Collaborative does and how OCASC has collaborated in many of these initiatives. Sure, we could talk all day. Yes, ma'am.
So Patty, one of the things that I'm concerned about is that people don't want to have dementia more than anything else. And
so then they go and seek an alternative diagnosis, like Lyme disease.
Well, they might have Lyme disease, but they might also have Alzheimer's disease. Dementia has such a stigma, and part of what this group needs to do, really and truly, is help people understand that it's not someone's fault if they get a dementia, and that it really is beneficial to get an early diagnosis, and that there's lots of things people can do to enhance their quality of life throughout the course of the disease. And so we have to talk about it more. We have to let people know that it's okay to admit that your partner or your mother or that you have a dementia diagnosis. It's really important that we demand that our clinical providers give us diagnoses and not just say, oh, well, I think you're fine. Come back and see me in 6 months. That's not good enough. Because I'll tell you, I'm gonna close with one story, and I don't make up any of my stories. Those of you that have heard me speak in the community, I love to use illustrative stories. Not one of them is made up or embellished. I don't have to.
Yeah.
The chief medical officer of one of the largest health plans in Orange County talked with me just in the last 2 weeks. And he said, you know, we do have to do something a little bit better about this stigma around dementia. He said, I have to tell you what happened to my father. We knew he had something going on. We knew things weren't right. And everybody was kind of doing things for him. I took over their finances. And I just said, oh, I'll just make it easier for you, Dad. but he seemed like he was doing okay. And we were just starting to think about maybe he shouldn't be driving anymore. Okay, which is a huge issue for families experiencing dementia, is how do you and when do you take away driving privileges? And it's a problem because people want to drive, especially in Orange County. Well, his father was alone an afternoon. And 3 days later, he was found in Ensenada, Mexico. 3 days later, he had enough wherewithal and he had some cash in his pocket, so he bought gas along the way. He didn't use his credit card, so they couldn't track him by his credit card receipts. Some good people in Ensenada recognized that he was having trouble and took care of him and did what they could to find out who he was and then get in touch with his relatives. Think about how that could have ended up. It could have been a tragedy that we're reading about in the newspaper, okay?
Those 3 days were hell.
Those 3 days for his family were hell, and imagine what he was going through. What bothers me is that person who's so confused, who's trying to get where they need to go, but they don't know where they need to go, and they don't know how to get there. And most people who are in that situation continue making turns based on their dominant hand. So one lady not long ago was in Lake Forest going to visit a friend in Mission Viejo, an 8-minute drive, and she was found in the desert of Arizona. And she was tracked because she stopped to get gas. And so the troopers in Arizona were alerted that there could be somebody in their area who needed assistance. And a trooper found her at a gas station trying to figure out how to put more gas in her car. What's that? Okay, so this happens all the time and we just don't always hear about it. So take these to your doctor. Say, I heard this crazy woman talking about how important cognitive health assessments are, and I really want you to take this training. I've taken it, doctor. It's pretty easy. I think you could manage it. Okay. Yes.
So as you know, some of us electeds here, you know, we go and I always give reports for what happens in these meetings. And I usually try and put up on our screen and then also on our feeders. So if you could pick one piece of paper that would be really, really important. You know what I'm going to give you?
On the left side in the back, paper clipped in, is the prevalence of dementia in Orange County.
if you talk about one thing, it's to note that there are 164,000 people in Orange County, most of whom don't have a diagnosis yet, who have frank presentation of some kind of dementia. And they're at risk. And their families are at risk. And if they're driving, then the rest of us on the road might be at risk.
So could I also, so I really want to focus on that cognitive health assessment, although giving it to our primary care physicians, I think kind of like that whole thing you were saying, if you get the community to start asking their providers about it. So I would like to.
So this one that says Dementia Care Aware, the DCA program was one of the first pieces of paper on the right-hand side of your packet. This is pretty much a synopsis of it.
Okay.
So those two things should be enough.
Thank you, Patty. That was excellent.
Thank you.
When you do polls here, do you suggest that people do them in bright colors?
Well, the post form itself is in the most obnoxious shape to be imaginable. And that was intentional in order to make it recognizable.
Okay, because mine's neon.
It's
fine with everybody's words.
It should be. It should be a pink neon.
And then you post it somewhere visible in your house.
On your refrigerator somewhere.
Because I was out of the country one day. Escaped from my husband.
Then go over
I had to tell him where I was.
If Claudia and Barbara give permission and Jean give permission, and then come back to do a pulse.
We're going to insist on
All right. Well, thank you. The only discussion items we had, we have already some discussion establishing. We already did establish that on to review senior assistant liaison assignments. Do we have an update on that?
Hi, Colette. An email was sent out to everybody, and hopefully everybody replied. Assignments have been made to senior centers, possibly not the ones that you selected. But they've been made and put together. And
some of you may have gotten the senior center you requested. Some of you may not. Some of you may have gotten your second choice. Some of you may have been assigned with a partner, and that was intentional because some senior centers are really big and need a little extra support. I could use some help because if you look at the list, I've got Garden Grove, La Habra, Midway City, Huntington Beach. I could use some help in the Garden Grove area and La Habra. We'll take one. Okay, Marianne, you and I'll talk. You still have to keep the one we assigned you.
Right.
Okay. Who said that? Okay, well, that's too bad because she's got to help. And you know what? Colette and I worked really hard on all of the information that you sent us. And I don't know if I'm allowed to make an autocratic statement, but I'm going to do it anyway. You know what? Unless there's a really, really good reason why you don't like your assignment, it's going to fall in the category of that's too bad. Okay. And the other thing we wanted to do, and I wasn't sure if we were allowed to pass out what we think are instructions of how to go about this. So as soon as Pauline is back and we went through Claudia and Pauline, but in our estimation, all of you should be seeing your senior centers about once a month. You should be recording what happens at this meeting. You should know your senior center directors and their ancillary staff. You should be familiar with all the programs that they have, and you should be part of the influencers of what happens in your senior center, because you can't complain if you're not getting what you need in the senior center unless you have been part of the planning and the solution. So coming from this body, you have a little clout. So if you want tips on how to introduce yourself or how to build that relationship, we could probably do something like that at a later meeting. But at the very least, go over to your senior center. Take your carcass there. Do not just call. go there, shake hands with the people that are in leadership, let them know who you are. You are appointed by our elected officials. And this is your role. So get with them. Get them, get to know them, have them know you, and maybe they have an issue that they want brought before this body. Maybe they have information that they want shared. It's a two-way street. We can help them and they can help us.
So more importantly, take one of those electeds with you.
Well, yes, if you take an elected with you to the senior center, now they are going to stop and take notice. But also, senior centers are a great place to arrange a coffee with the congressman kind of thing.
They should be a nonpartisan.
Okay, that's okay. I mean, I see your point, but once people are elected, now they are our representatives, and party doesn't matter in terms of issues that affect older adults. We need to have all of our elected officials, regardless of political affiliation.
And we do have a judge. You can't just meet with the electeds that are your part.
Right.
That's what I'm
saying. You have to know them all. Right. But go and see your senior centers. What I would like to see is that by next month, every single one of you will have gone to the senior centers that you are assigned and at least made contact. And Colette and I are going to be part of that accountability. Thank you.
Okay, good. Thank you.
Thank you. I could ask you a question.
Yes.
Is the senior center list, that's an internal facing document, like it's not available to the public?
Well, the senior center list, no, it's a public document. That's something that was compiled by my organization and interns with Jocelyn's assistance. So we took the list from the county of the existing senior centers and then corrected any of the information that needed to be updated and made contact with every senior center so we know who the directors are, who some of their important staff are, and how to get in touch with them.
And is there like a certain definition of what constitutes a senior center?
Well, sure. If it is serving older adults, if that's their purpose, and it's designated a senior center by their municipality or by the county, or groups like AgeWell that operate senior centers.
Okay. So Center for Independent Living, they serve older adults. So I work for the Dale McIntosh Center.
Right.
And so we were just wondering if we should get on the list, because we do, our mission is access and independence for access, equity, and independence by and for people with disabilities and older adults.
Well, that's above my pay grade, so I would defer that to Claudia.
I'm gonna say I don't believe so that the independent centers are technically considered a senior center by virtue of their role. They're more designed as independent centers for individuals with disabilities. However, we can have some discussion online. There's some more information. Thank you for joining us.
Oh, thank you for having me.
Who are you representing? I'm sorry, I
didn't hear that. Oh, I'm Beth Levin. I'm the systems change advocate for Dale McIntosh Center for the Disabled. It's our Center for Independent Living.
Thank you.
One more question.
Yes.
Are any of these documents in PDF format someplace?
They're all in PDF format. I'm not sure you want all of them sent to you. So if you want to email me the things you'd like to have, then we'll make sure you have them either in hard copy form or by PDF.
Well, I think the answer to that is we just assigned the liaisons to senior centers that you want shared. So which of these couple of documents?
She said she's going to work on it.
Yeah. Okay. So, yes, I'll let you.
Because it's a lot to get to our senior center.
Right. And these particular packets aren't necessarily for the senior centers. These are for you to take to your doctor. Okay. But if you'd like more information, Colette and I can work on things you could take to the senior center. And then I would just need your direction as to what the process is for approval before we send it.
Okay. Definitely process to making any information that's for public. We'll take a look at it, give you some feedback, and just make sure that all the branding, if any, needed is to the county across the state.
Yeah.
So we'll definitely coordinate that.
So that will unfold. It may not happen immediately by next month, but little by little, we'll have more for you to take to your senior centers. And in fact, you know, this is a really good thing to take to your senior centers. We have sent it out via email. We have delivered hard copies to senior centers. But if you go to your senior center and you say, oh, by the way, do you know about this? Have you read it? Oh, maybe not. Maybe they haven't read the email. Maybe they haven't looked at the hard copy that was dropped off. So this is another really good thing for you not only to go online and look at, but to then discuss with your senior centers.
Yeah, we'll put that down for discussion on it for our executive committee.
Great.
That's what we need to talk about. Okay, let's move into the chair's item, new business. I don't have any new business. Old business. I think we're pretty much up to date on what we've been doing in the past. We do have a member, a new member that will be coming for the executive committee. Chair's comments. We got talked enough. Office on Aging updates. Claudia.
All right. Thank you. Good morning, everyone. Thank you so much, Patty, for that wonderful presentation. Absolutely love it. So quick updates. PACT Act. So for our older adults and especially our veterans, there is a PACT Act benefit. Those that are exposed to burn pits, exposure during the Vietnam, Gulf War, post 9/11 era. There is a benefit that the Veterans Administration is currently granting post-back pay benefits up to a year to August of 2022. That deadline was actually on the 9th, which was on Wednesday. No, just this past, oh my gosh, two days ago. However, Veterans Administration yesterday released that they extended that deadline just for the back pay. To Monday, August 14th.
You're going too fast. Back pay.
Back pay for your PACT Act eligible benefits.
PACT Act.
PACT Act.
P-A-C-T.
And so I wanted to share that piece of information for those of you that are veterans and or family members, dependents, survivors, and or you know someone in your circle of friends and family and support system. Our Veteran Service Office is here to assist any information about the PACT Act or benefits or back pay, or simply initiating if you yourself or know someone that it could be you know, a benefit of that, please reach out to our Veteran Service Office and they will guide in doing the letter of intent to file. Letters of intent to file is basically letting the Veterans Administration know that you're intending to file a claim, but it saves your date for your benefits.
And
so
the deadline again is
August 14th.
Oh, just,
yeah, no worries. Let me share the phone number to our Veteran Service Office. That direct number is 714 area code 480-6555. Again, that's 714-480-6555. Please encourage anyone. I know the deadline's coming up. Now, this deadline is only specific to the back pay. However, at any point in time, your veterans, your survivors, can apply for PACT Act benefits at any time. So I wanted to give that quick update. Also with me, I have one of our Office on Aging managers, Erin. I believe many of you have met Erin. For those of you who have not, Erin is our manager overseeing our, and currently leading our nutrition contracts and services, our LGB nutrition program, which is the program that provides the meals, free meals to anyone age 60 and older and their caregivers that live with reside with them. In a congregate setting, many at our local senior centers and or community centers, and also our home delivered services. So Erin's gonna give you a little bit update on what's happening under the nutrition program currently. Erin?
Hi, good morning.
I wanted to just let, kind of came here to let you know that we are RFPing. We have a request for proposal out right now for these programs. And so I have flyers. We're trying to, try to bring in new organizations. So we are really trying to push outreach and getting organizations to apply for these programs and submit a proposal. So I do have flyers. If anybody wants to, pass them along to, nutrition serving organizations that they might have contact with, have those there. The deadline, we have some deadlines that are coming up. So the RFP is due September 6th. So it has been out for a couple weeks now. So, but just, but we've got about three more weeks, almost a month left before the RFP is actually due. So I just wanted to let you know about that, get the word out that this is available to organizations that do want to propose their, and submit a response and potentially be considered to be our E&P providers for both programs. So both congregate, like Lida said, is the senior meal programs and most, mostly senior centers, and then the home delivery meal services. But my other reason to be here too is that as part of the RFP process, we do have to do an evaluation. So I know some of you may have been on our eval panels before, but we do need, I came here to try to recruit you and get you to volunteer to be on our RFP panels. We do have this one as well. We do have another one coming out another month, plan to come out another month for our 3B and our supportive services. So that will be another panel that we will need. We'll actually have two panels. We plan on having two panels for that one because of the number of services that we're gonna have out for solicitation. And then we might have another one after that for our two CalFresh programs. So there's a lot of RFPs coming up over this next year, the next 6 months or so. And we'd really appreciate any help that you could provide in being a panelist on an RFP. So I can probably explain what that means if I need to. Okay. And so really what you're doing when you're serving on the panel is that you are going to, once we've received all of the proposals, that our county staff are going to go through them and find the ones that meet threshold. So once we do that, you as a panelist will then be given the proposals to review. And so you'll get, it used to be binders, not binders anymore, it's all electronic, but you will be sent the proposals and score sheets, and you will go through them and rate basically how each organization answers the questions for that. So you will be rating these proposals. So then you will submit these questions back. You have about a month, I think, in the timeline that you have. We have about a month to do three weeks or so to review what you have been assigned to review. You will give back your answers. Our county staff will compile all of the responses, and then you will meet as an evaluation panel, review all everybody's responses. There might be some, some negotiating on scores that are going to be finalized. And then as the panelists, you are recommending kind of the ranking, or recommending that our office and the county goes into contract with these, these providers for this service. So that's the basic process. It is, the commitment is a couple meetings. Like I said, there might be a first meeting, maybe on Zoom, might still be on Zoom. There is an evaluation meeting where all the panels come together to review everything in total. And then, but there's also, there's usually probably an interview as well. So there could be a day where you're actually interviewing the proposers. So there's some time commitment in person, as well as just kind of reviewing the proposals on your own. And that's flexible, obviously, what time you do that. But that's kind of the basic process. But I mean, you're all advocates in the community. You kind of know what the community needs, and you have that expertise in those areas. So you're prime candidates really for these panels. So we do have several again coming up. So we would really appreciate it if anybody, maybe everybody could at least be on one. We do each panel. We're trying to pull probably two one to two staff members, so just depending on what availability is for people, you know, hopefully we can get all of you to participate at some point in these again, because we are having, you know, probably at least four panels coming up. So that's four or five people total. There's county staff and other people that will be on those, but it is panels of five with hopefully one or two of you.
In the past, we were solicited via email, and I think mm-hmm. that volunteers responded within like sometimes an hour, and everything was
yeah.
all set up. So maybe that's.
Yeah, no, I've got a lot more. Yeah. So hopefully being here will get you guys, you know, those that aren't sure what it was
yeah.
or. Weren't sure what the commitment was or what it really means to maybe do some of our future meeting, our future panels. Yeah, we do have one that is already, you know, we have our high cap ones that have already are in the process as well. Yes.
Question. I deliver from Meals on Wheels or H-Roll every day of the week. Do they have to renegotiate being included each year or?
They would have to submit a proposal when we go out for bid, yes.
So it happens frequently?
Every 4 years. We're every 4 years.
Four.
Yeah.
And one of my clients submits bids, so I am assuming I should not be on any of these reviews.
Yeah, if you have any conflict, you can have conflict with any of the organizations that would be proposing. Yeah.
Aaron, you mentioned as part of the process that negotiating on scores, is that a county requirement?
It's part of the process, and we, as a panel, you figure out like how you're going to score. It has to do with if there's discrepancy between two panelists. If somebody scores a five on a question and somebody scores a three, you have to come in. You can't have more than 1 point difference in that. So you have to, as each panelist, you have to decide if you're going to change scores or that. That's
yeah.
kind of that process. Yeah, we just don't want to see just too much discrepancy. Yeah, as you review everything, and so there's consensus as the panel, there's a consensus on what these scores should be. The individual kind of question, scores for each question, and then they're all tallied.
Okay,
so real quick next steps on that. Most likely the communication will come from Pauline as our liaison, and Pauline will then coordinate which one of the groups, you know, comes forward to volunteer for that to communicate with the managers meeting the proposal. So as we get a little closer to now obtaining and getting the evaluation panels together, most likely you will hear from Holly. So when it comes to you, it's you understand what the ask was.
So if anybody wants to do the nutrition, I will take volunteers. We can know now.
She's here today.
I need to get nutrition ones. The other ones will come in the future as we pull together those. And if you do volunteer, Rita Gore is our contact. So if you're hearing from Rita, that's why. It would be because you volunteered to be on a panel. So again, I will take any.
Where do the in-person meetings take place?
When?
Where?
Probably downtown in our downtown Santa Ana Pass building. So right down by the hall admin.
There, if they're in Chihuahua, he's got to be.
I'll take volunteers. Thank you.
Thank you, Aaron. And then my last update is the older American Act regulations proposal. I believe during the last meeting, the deadline to submit public comment is the 15th, which is next Tuesday. C4A, the California Association of Area Agency on Aging, has compiled the response based on all the AAAs that coordinated their efforts to submit a joint public comment. Fortunately, I was not able to share that document because they were still vetting all the information. They were scheduled a tentative deadline of today to get all the compiled comments over to, you know, sent over so that they can meet that public comment deadline of the 15th. So if any of you, as always, as individuals, everyone is open to submit their comments. If you prefer to send a comment my way, please send it to me, see me afterwards. Send it directly to me. That way I can make sure if it's not already one of the highlights in a very long The document that, as the work group that I met with C4A is extremely long. So the biggest highlight I can tell you on some of the comments is just language clarifications, because there's always some room for, you know, interpretation, depending on, you know, the reader. And so there's some clarification on languages. There is a language request clarification on the bodies of advisory councils, which in this case would affect this advisory council, in what it means as an advisory council versus, like, you know, government body. So there's just some language in there that's a little confusing. C4A has, you know, seen that, so they will submit for, you know, a comment on that to clarify. And then a lot of it is just impacts in terms of programs, contracts, flexibilities, and some just regulations that really impact service providers, right? When we put out proposals and we're trying to look at, you know, feasibility, program operations. And so some of that has to do with that language and a lot of funding questions in terms of, like, one-time funds. On, you know, how do you fiscally sustain programs that you receive as a one time? What happens thereafter if the program is a success? How do we move forward? So there's some questions on that. Just a quick little highlight. Wanted to share that with you. So please, I'll be here till the end of the meeting. Come to me. I'll make sure that you have my email information. If there's anything specific you want to share with me, so I want to update you on that. And other than that, I think that's all I have.
Thank you, Clay. I appreciate that. All right. John, I'm sorry, go ahead.
Gene, there's something that came through our American Legion website about a new streaming platform directed at veterans. It's referred to as the Veterans Channel. I just saw this today, Claudia, so I'll send that to you. That might be something to report on in the future. It looks like it's brand new, so I don't know where it's going, but at this point, it struck me, wow, that's interesting. So I've never seen that before.
Yeah,
so
thank you, John.
Okay, I'll let you know. Thank you, John. Standing committee report, American Legion Future Chairs.
Yes, well, first of all, I wanted to say thank you to John and Rachel and Crystal for your leadership. I know it takes a lot of coordination and also leading the meetings. Time commitment, so thanks to each of you, and I will hand it over to John to talk about what happened and what's going to happen at the Senior Citizens Engagement.
Thank you. I'm going to speak to what's going to happen. On Monday, we'll have a Senior Citizen Engagement Committee meeting. We will have the pleasure of Meredith speaking to us. It's called Older Adult Cohorts, I believe is the title of the presentation. And I'm reaching out to OC, Advanced OC, to have them come to our social senior citizen engagement meeting to give us a little more information about what that, since it's senior engagement, what they may be able to help us with in terms of understanding our constituents a little bit better.
Rachel, is it taking place? John, where is it taking place?
What?
On Monday, where is it taking place?
Grand Avenue.
Excuse me. In the performance is August 21st, so it's going to be 14th instead of the 21st for our meeting.
It was a week from this time.
The senior citizens engagement, according to
Karen,
the agenda, says the 21st.
Excuse me, I misspoke. The 21st.
Okay, I just wanted to make sure it was right. Wait. Okay.
Thank you.
Going from memory, so I guess I didn't listen to the presentation.
No, I just wanted to make sure. That's all.
Yes, that's what's important.
Thank you.
Rachel.
Okay, so the Wellbeing Reimagined Committee is on August 16th, which I believe is next Wednesday. And the Multi-Ethnic Collaborative of Community Agencies is going to do a presentation for us about the programs on early intervention services for older adults that they manage in turn in some of our ethnic communities.
Crystal, welcome to transportation.
So
So we met yesterday, and thanks to Claudia for connecting me with Eric Inslee, who is one of the members of the Orange County Veterans Affairs Services. And this is one of those times, we had probably 12 or 13 people. It was overwhelming, the amount of information that I can't recite in 2 minutes. Nathan, I'm sure you'd agree with me. I'm going to hit on just a couple points as it related to, we kind of focused it after the broad spectrum of everything that the Veterans Services Office does, focused it more on how they interact with our vets, but mostly we're focusing on our senior vets and housing and making sure they keep their homes. So the one thing I'll say is the supportive services for veterans, this office is it's under overwhelming what they can do for our vets, all vets, not just senior vets. So I have a couple things here that I asked Eric to give so I can hand out. So I really encourage everyone to go look at that. I would like eventually for Eric to come here and give that presentation because it's incredibly important that everybody knows exactly what's out there. But the first thing is starting with getting our senior vets into the door. And once that happens, the amount of interaction and availability to things they may not even realize that are available to them from funding, claims where there's money, and it all relates back to some of these seniors, senior vets, are on the verge of maybe losing their home or losing cars because they don't realize that they have these credits or these different payments that they could apply for, and the whole process on how that goes is above my pay grade. But they focus on the home and community care program and in-home caregiving that could be covered, or I think he had mentioned some can get up to $6,000.
I know people that are able to live in assisted living because of that program.
Yes. So getting our seniors housed, especially our senior vets, this program and programs like it. So and even the education benefits to where some students, they have said some family members of some senior vets where the tuition for any Cal State Cal University or junior college was waived, and which again means it's not coming out of the seniors' pocket. So I hope that we can have him here to go through the breadth of this, but super amazing, and I'm going to do my best to relay the information during our council meetings and then also to our senior centers, but definitely. Thank you for connecting us with that, because it's amazing.
And some of my committee members have asked to have a similar presentation from VA, so maybe we should postpone that until unless we.
Yeah, I'll have a conversation with Sandy, Margaret, and that way we can coordinate on a presentation schedule.
Yes.
For a veteran service officer.
Yeah.
Rather not.
Yeah. Thank you.
Okay, good. All right, let's go to the presentation schedule. Sandy and Barbara.
I don't see anything for October. Yeah. Oh, I submitted it. Somehow I didn't get on the form.
Sandy, did you send it to Pauline?
Yeah.
Okay.
And she's Pauline. She's out.
She's been out. So we'll catch it. If you already have something in there, I know I was thinking plugging in Veteran Service Office, but if you already have something, we'll coordinate.
We'll talk.
Okay. Absolutely.
Okay.
I'm sorry. Can I add one thing that I would be remiss? There's a virtual career fair. And take your code for that for veterans. Because one of the things, like if a senior veteran has some sort of disability prevents them from being able to physically work, this career fair helps identify areas where they could still potentially engage in the workforce, but maybe just not doing what they did forever. So I definitely want to make sure everyone knows.
can't just get it. So, sorry.
Announced by staff member, just real, I'd like to make one real quick brief announcement.
I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
September presentation is going to be what? And October's presentation is going to be what? Sandy?
You know, I'm going to, I didn't bring the schedule in. Did you have a March?
The schedule?
September?
September,
September presentation so far is a discussion of opioids and cannabis.
That's Bill
Luke.
Bill Luke, yeah.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, real brief. I just want to share experience I had yesterday. I attended our Placentia Orleans Unified School District State of the District, and we have a new superintendent, Alex Chern. What a sharp individual! What I'm mentioning here is he took it in a different light. He did a leadership workshop, basically. Audience was packed with community members, principals, teachers. And he did it with the concept of that the challenge that teachers have today is to teach their students for careers that haven't been invented yet and skills that haven't been developed yet. And that's their challenge. How do we prepare our students for this? And one of the things he did a lot of exercises. And he said, okay, let's take 5 minutes, chit chat with your neighbor and say, give me 10 items, 10 things that exist today that will not be around in 10 years. Then he said, and then give me 10 items that you think will be up and coming in the next 10 years that haven't been even developed yet. And I'll tell you, it really pushed our thinking. And then he showed a video. And the video showed, and the reason I mentioned that to us here, is how many things are going to be impacting us within 10, 15 years. I hadn't even thought about, you know, we're talking about artificial intelligence, how that's really a big topic today. It's going to get to the point where actually, have you thought about that artificial intelligence being injected into our brain, how it will mind meld kind of thing? And a lot of that they can do now. It's just these little chips that'll give you instant recall or having like a little file in your mind that you go back and remember all these things. But more importantly, that they could have the potential to download your memories. So you're going to you will become virtual someplace in a file. Who you are as a person. And then all the little things that can enhance us, our vision, spinal injuries can be, you can walk. You see that now with a lot of the orthotics that allow you to do these things. So, and I thought, boy, well, this could be interesting for seniors because this can do a lot of stuff and maybe address this Alzheimer thing or put in a chip with us that will say, kind of monitor our body functions. Hey, you know, you're low in sugar, you got a problem. All these kinds of things. So there's a lot coming down the pipe that we can't even think of yet. And I thought it was interesting how you wove that in with how do we teach our kids to prepare for this? And he said, hey, you stay with the basics. You still teach them read, write, math. Don't deviate from that. That's giving that basic platform and it'll go from there. But if you think about it, look at all the things that we've seen in this room. You know, was it in high school? We didn't have computers. I didn't have a cell phone. You know, we were old school.
I remember slide rules.
We had see, this group can really relate to a lot of this. You've got to be with what we're talking about. Yeah, it's a very, very interesting topic. And food for thought. So just think about that. You know, what wouldn't be around in 10 years? Think about it. Because we're talking with cars, maybe not cars, we know it. And then, as luck would have it, last night I saw in the news where they have, for traffic, they have new cars that levitate. They're like huge
drones
that can go up really high and then transport you. So you're driving, take you someplace, and they had it. They showed the person in it. They went up. You know, everything that you see, like you said, the Jetsons, like in comics, futuristic novel, science fiction. The science fiction of 20 years ago is a reality today. So it'll be the same thing in 20 years from now. So I just saw that. I found it fascinating. If I can get this video, I'll bring it in and show you because I think it's really cool.
And if you haven't tried AI yet, right now, Perplexity AI, it's much better than ChatGPT.
Okay.
It's up to date and it has a reference. So you can click on the reference on the AI and it takes you to the actual web page so that you know that
unlike ChatGPT, it's actual information and it's not something that the AI has made up to fill in a gap.
Perplexity
AI, and it's free. And it's really good. I've been using it a lot at work for the last 2 weeks, and it's very, very good.
So having said what I just said, one of the challenges we're going to be real clear is ethical challenges. What is the ethics of it? Just because we can do it, should we do it?
Yeah.
I mean, it's fascinating stuff. Man. Of course, I love that kind of thing. All right, anyone else? Let's go around the room. Do we have anything on this side over here?
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
This may be more old school, but I don't know how many of you followed up on last month's meeting with the Get Set Up and took a class online. I handed it off to my husband. He took it. Learn how to use your Android phone. It made our household a lot smoother. I wasn't giving the lessons.
Yes.
Someone who was vetted to give it. I shared it with all my Meals on Wheels people and showed them how to line up for it. The offerings for classes are enormous. The other thing I did personally is I signed up for the Meritus Institute. I think it was one of our members who really spoke to it. And I took an advanced Spanish class online through Zoom. And just wanted to say thank you to this group because I'm receiving so many possibilities that I feel a real onus to then share that with either my people I'm in contact with or the centers. We have so much to share because you're funneling it through us. So thank you.
Perfect. Anyone else? So yes.
Saturday, I went out to the Irvine music concert that they do in the park, right? Because Tijuana Dogs was playing, which attracts a whole lot of gray hairs. And I ended up handing out over 100 answer magazines to folks who have no clue that there were any kind of services in the county for any of the things. It was just amazing to me. But it seemed to be the right place to try that. So I spent time walking up and down the aisles and visiting with people. So we all have
concerts.
We all have concerts. So I brought more answer magazines if anybody wants to. Say
thank you for being the champion for that.
It's been kind of fun.
Yeah.
It's been kind of fun.
All right. Anyone else to say? Going around. I've seen any. Okay. Then I will say we are adjourned. Our next meeting is September 8th, 9:30. Here, up in the UTR standing committee. So thank you for pointing that out. It is August 16th, well-being remix, August 21st, senior citizens engagement, August 25th, executive committee, December 14th, August 17th. We are adjourned. Have a wonderful day and take it to the edge.
And Tijuana Dogs will be in Newport Beach on the 20th at their concert. So I'm going to say
Yeah.